I propose that Ted Roczen and three of his strongest men undertake this expedition. By acclamation.
Order! Order!
Willis allowed an orderly debate to take place that lasted nearly 5 hours. Finally, it was proposed that a compromise solution be taken, in which Rock would pick his best man, and the other two delegates would be chosen from among all of Century City's citizens. The compromise passed, and then votes were taken on a total of 50 candidates. At last, after they had been up nearly the entire night and consumed countless gallons of coffee, the two were elected. Terry Goldman, the most influential woman in the city, one of the members of the council itself and the head of the Economic Development Committee, and Dean Keppel, considered by many to be the most educated and scholarly man of the subterranean city. The dean was the head of the Century City University, which produced nearly 100 graduates each year. Keppel, a man in his mid-50s, had a whitish silver mustache and spoke with a southern accent. Within Century City's original tunnel-trapped group of survivors, there had been men and women of many races, colors, and creeds. When they had built the tunnel into something resembling a city, they had often grouped into units similar in some way to themselves. These units had maintained a kind of ethnic consciousness, keeping the old traits, lifestyles, and accents alive. Thus, McCaughlin, with his Scottish brogue and heavy drinking ways, was descended from the Scottish-Irish subculture of the city, while Dean Keppel had grown up in what was called the Little South section of the city, Level 17, where those who identified with that particular persuasion had gone to live. These ethnic groupings, with their own style of dress and mannerisms, with their own foods and holidays, even parades, and of course their accents, which they not only kept, but fostered and tended like a lingual garden, kept the spirit of a people, a way of life from the old America, alive. Rock was glum about the choices of Dean Keppel and Terry Goldman as delegates. Were they physically and emotionally strong enough to make the arduous journey? Rock would be allowed just one man to take with him to protect these two. Who should it be? Who was the toughest? The sun rose shakily over the Colorado Rockies. The night had been long and hard. Smoky mist covered the lowlands, foul and putrid. The still rising steam of the acid rains, pungent and burning in the nostrils. And from out of the mists, the tallest structure on earth, black and ominous, oozing evil from every steel pore, rose into the orange dawn. The Monolith, headquarters of the KGB in America, a vision so terrifying to the surrounding slave workers and farmers in their little shanty towns that they were barely able to look at the monstrous structure. It always towered over them, a reminder of their powerlessness and of the fate that awaited them were they to displease their Russian masters. From the 80th floor of the black steel and glass structure, Colonel Kilov, commander of the Blackshirts, looked out over the land of post-war America, the land around what had once been Denver, now his seat of power. Others rejoiced in beauty, what little of it there was to find, but Kilov found his pleasure in ugliness, darkness, and death. He watched with serene pleasure as the lingering mists from acid rains swept across the American slave huts and lean-tos off in the distance. He absorbed the sickly orange glow of the sun as it hobbled over the mountains to the east, a plodding ball of dull fire hardly able to compete with the darkness of the world. He could see it all from up here, through his huge tinted picture windows that ran the length of the entire floor on every side, his home and operations center. The clouds, the gray mountains, the wastelands to the south, charcoal-colored, devoid of green, red, blue.
Yet another day.
He knew he would have to do something about this increasing drug habit of his. He didn't like to think about it. He was taking so many pills now. It was not that he cared about the rightness or wrongness of it, but he couldn't die. That was all. The colonel had too much to do.
Yes, I will cut down my doses and eat. But not today. Today, there is much to do.
Now, the Colonel's greatest accomplishment to date was at hand. The destruction of the Reconstitutional Convention, as the rebel fools were calling it, that was to be held in 2 weeks. Kilov turned his chair and faced the dimly lit mirror that hung from the ceiling. He looked into it with horrified fascination. His face was gaunt, his eyes sunk deep back into their sockets, his cheeks hollow black crevices. His body was emaciated, with hardly an ounce of flesh or muscle, a living skeleton. His fingernails had grown long and curved, and boils and sores had erupted on his back and arms and legs. Sores that never healed, but oozed a dark pus, wetting his crisp black shirt uniform, creating a stench of rot that never left the 80th floor. Yet he felt powerful, more powerful than ever. His thin face erupted into a smile.
How clever of you to bide your time and not expose the mole. One of your deep penetration operatives sent from Moscow only 6 months before, able to infiltrate into the very building where the meeting was to take place. Soon they will be a lot warmer than they had expected. Now I will crush the entire leadership of the underground in one fell swoop. Then Zhabnov and Vasily. For I am smart. Smarter than all of them.
He saw it all clearly now as the drugs hit his system with a burst of manic electricity, filling his veins with energy. He turned back to the window, seeing the red sun reflecting off the Rocky Mountains like splotches of blood, armed black helicopters passing overhead in perfect V formation, heading off to the west in search of roving rebel bands. Suddenly, he understood his role on Earth as never before. He was the, what had they called it in the old days? The Antichrist. Death itself, come to claim a world that couldn't be tamed, except by death. His mission was to end this world, this place of light, once and for all, to destroy every living thing, forever. As he pressed his hand to the cool glass, it all made sense.
I will have total power, all the world, from pole to pole. Only then I will...
He held up his other hand, and in it the empty vial of Arthovalium.
As I crush this, so I will crush the world. But that is why the world was created, why I was born, to perform the final act. The Kali Kali cult in India, was it they who believed that a savior, a destroyer, would be born and worshipped throughout the world, and then the end? Shiva. Kilov.
Suddenly, his brain was on fire. His lungs cried for oxygen. His knees grew weak. A few minutes later, a servant carrying a flask of juice, the only thing he now consumed, walked in and found him lying there, trembling like an epileptic. Doctors were quickly summoned, and they nervously conferred around the unconscious form, knowing that their lives were on the line. They decided to rush him to an ultra-modern medical facility about a mile away in the New Trotsky Hospital, one of the best in the country, if not the world. They took him up to the roof, where his private helicopter whisked him to the facility. They worked frantically on him, hooking him up to life support equipment, slamming an IV into his thin veins, and shooting in massive doses of vitamins and minerals. He was living off his own flesh, consuming it along with his pounds of pills to fuel his mad ambitions. His body was shrunken down to its core. There was nothing left to consume. But there was a toughness to him beyond the mortal. And though many a man would have liked to see the Colonel dead, none was brave enough to do the slightest thing about it. Except Drognov, one of President Zhabnov's four commandos, who had been able to become an orderly in the Monolith's hospital with forged transfer papers. Drognov stood in a doorway, a broom in his hand, as the black shirt leader went by. His body smelled like maggoted meat. His head lolled from side to side in pain. He knew of the Colonel's drug habit, knew that eventually the skull would find his way to the hospital, to the proximity of deadly scalpels that could be wielded in stealth. He might escape, he might not, but the moment of highest triumph of the killer would be his. What was there in life except the ultimate achievement of one's highest goal? In this case, the death of Kilov. Premier Vasily, ruler of all the world, was sitting in a large purple armchair playing Mancala with his manservant Brahala, and getting soundly beaten.
I win again, Grandfather.
That's three countries, and 100 cities I owe you for the week, Brahala.
Only 2 countries and 90 cities, Your Excellency. You did win 2 games yesterday.
Brahala, don't you ever get tired of my company? Of the Kremlin? Don't you ever long for your...
Africa isn't what it used to be, Your Excellency. There is so much pain and death there. Famine, pestilence. And, sir, if I might suggest again...
Yes. Your request for a cessation of the genetic experiments being conducted there. Your wish has been taken under advisement. It will happen. Africa will be an independent, semi-autonomous black republic. Someday. But first, I must consolidate my power over the empire. Until I do, until Kilov is defeated, and I can mop up the trouble in Southeast Asia and the Moor of Beer, then we shall see an Africa restored. Rahala, that is what you want, is it not?
Yes, Your Excellency. And I know that you do not lie, but those horrible genetic farms in Kenya producing mutant gladiators for...
Trust me. Time, Rahala, is on our side. Africa has been nearly depopulated. Only a few million blacks on the entire continent. A zoo for the KGB and their merciless experiments. They have controlled the continent since the war with an iron fist. Only now is their grip relaxing enough for me to take over. But time, Rahala. It all takes time.
I believe you, Excellency. And that is the only reward I want for my services. A living Africa. My people restored and admitted to the Empire as a sovereign socialist nation.
Rahala, you have earned that as a reward for your services to me. As the saver of my life. I will make a present to you of a free Africa within 2 years. This I promise, Ruanda Rahala, son of the Plains Lion.
How long without my Arthur Valium?
Must rest, Colonel Kilov. You had a fainting spell, and fortunately nothing is broken. But if I may say, you will need intravenous...
No food. No food. Why am I strapped down? Who are you? Where are the other doctors?
I am Dragnov, Colonel. The chief surgeon's replacement. You remember giving the order for a replacement, don't you?
Unbind me at once.
Oh, you might fall down again.
The doctor smiled. He pressed the stethoscope against Kilov's sunken chest.
Ah, I believe I detect a heartbeat. I believe we can fix that.
Suddenly, Kilov understood.
Guards! Security! This man is going to...
This room is soundproof, Colonel. You're only going to succeed in annoying me. I'm here to help. You've been doing yourself in with so many pills, haven't you?
I need no operation!
Oh, but you do. We have to remove all those bad things from your body. You know, a lung transplant, a heart transplant. Strictly routine, though a bit risky. So I'm going to do it myself.
Kilov's eyes widened in their sockets until they seemed too large for his narrow head.
Going to do it without anesthetic, too, as our great leader Zhabnov commanded.
Zhabnov! You're...
Yes. Now just relax, and we'll have those unpleasant organs out of your body in no time. Each in turn... First your heart, then your lungs, your liver. Everything will be replaced by these machines. The tubes you see will take over all the functions of your diseased organs. You will stay alive a long time. Immobile. We will remove your spinal fluid, paralyze you from the neck down by taking out a few spinal discs.
I offer you money, riches beyond your dreams. What is he paying you? I'll triple it, quadruple it.
Money? Money is not the concern of the revenge hunter, Kilov. Only to do one's mission. To remove you as a force in the world, and to do it the most painful way I can imagine. I think I'm going to succeed on all counts, don't you? But first, I have to sterilize our tools. No use letting an infection take you away from us.
Kilov was finding it hard to think. His strength was sapped. He was in the restraints. The ring. Suddenly he remembered his large gold ring on his right hand. He looked first, making sure that the assassin wasn't looking. The ring was still there. If he could just move his thumb over the top, open the nozzle.
Ah, there we are. And there you are. Well, you don't look so terrifying right now. In fact, you look downright ridiculous. A squirming worm. Now, let us make the first cut.
The ring worked. Kilov tilted his chest to the side, and the scalpel slid over into his hand. He carefully cut one of his bonds free, and then quickly the other. He rose slowly from the hospital bed, his body a mass of aches and pains. Kilov knelt down to face the gasping man on the floor. The assassin's eyes were open, but he seemed unable to move.
Yes. Nice, isn't it? Doesn't kill. Just paralyzes the muscle system. But you can still feel pain. Oh yes, every little bit of it should be exquisitely experienced.
Kilov reached down with the scalpel and began.